Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Do I really want to pay my mortgage? And then it stuck to me that gig to work out the affordability, livability, and investability of one property at the same time.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we continue our discussion with property strategist Vaibhav Rastogi, who has managed funds of up to $2 billion in Australia whilst working in finance. We discuss the strategies he's used to secure a $5 million plus property portfolio, and he shares the best and worst moments of his investment career. Rastogi spent 6 months working at Westpac as an equities analyst, and then the prospect of his children and their future entered his mind.
I was still under financial pressure. Didn't want to compromise on our first child as well, like in terms of the aspirations.
Of course. I mean, your first child is going to be something that you put a lot of love and care and, you know, financial support towards. And, you know, I think every parent does it as well. I remember my first child, we spent quite a lot of money, you know, getting the best of the best if we could. Second child, different story. It's like usually we've got a first child. But you don't know what you don't know. And I think that's
exactly
the thing.
Right.
So, you know, it's a lifestyle decision, but also we try our best for the kids that we, you know, for our kids' sake as well too. So that's really, really interesting. You were in Westpac and you started, I guess, learning a little bit more about the financial side. At what stage did you decide to purchase your property in Australia? Did you buy a first home or did you start investing into property?
Yeah, so that was the thing that I was talking about. 6 months into my role, I saw that consistency of my paycheck and I was looking at my bank balance, which was not there. And the question was like, okay, like 2010 already and my daughter is only 2 years old now. Do I really want to buy my own property here instead of paying the rent? Do I really want to pay my mortgage? And then it struck to me that it's very hard gig to work out the affordability, livability, and investability of one property at the same time. And that made me realize that, okay, let me pick some books. And I started reading about it. So one of my favorite books is Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I'm sure everyone
great
might
book.
Have heard of it.
Yes.
If not, go for it. If you already read it one more time. And that's where I actually learned the concept of asset and liability, not from the accounting perspective, but more from the personal growth perspective. And I realized that I'm better off going for my investment as compared to my first home. Though I had nothing at that point of time in terms of my deposit for either of them, but it was more about aspiration and having a plan. Because good thing with me and my wife is like, we just like a company, like a business, people talk about the business strategy and the 5-year planning and 10 years planning. We used to talk about our own personal growth, like, okay, where do we see ourselves in the next 10 years? And that maybe in 2010, something on those lines, like we started working out, like, are we living in our own home or not? And we realized that we really want to be on the beach next to the water view property and just chasing the kids over there. So that was the aspiration that we had in 2010. And I kid you not, I am actually in Norton Beaches next to the beach.
Well, it comes true.
So yeah, exactly. To me, it's more about where you put your mind on, your focus on, the energy flows and law of attraction works. So I got in touch with lots of good people out there who gave me that inspiration. I started going for different seminars and I realized that education, when it comes to the financial education, yes, I've been well educated from that point of view that, you know, engineering, then master's in IT and then MBA. But when it comes to personal finance, it's an entirely different story. I knew how to read accounting books or look at the growth potential of a company, but how do I put and apply those rules on me as a family is entirely different ballgame.
And I think that's the biggest difference is that a company, you have a group of people who know that they're one, you know, aspiring towards that one big company goal, and they're getting paid to be there. Whereas a family, there's, you know, a lot of personal, emotional attachments behind it. You know, you're not all being here to be paid to be aiming to get a big house here and do that and so forth. It's all about, you know, what does every one of us individually want as a family, you know, as a group, and trying to achieve that. So I can totally understand. And I think the challenge we all face, you know, in any type of families is that everyone will have different opinions. You know, there might be one party who's more gung-ho to go and invest into property. There's another one who's sort of, you know, takes a step back and goes, oh, I'm not sure about this and that. And you just got to try and come to some kind of compromise. And it's always that, you know, give and take.
I'm okay for someone to take a very conscious decision or lack of decision as long as it's done deliberately, as in consciously. The challenge that I find is that people have forgotten about themselves as the hero of their own life. We are just, you know, going through and leading the life without really, I mean, it's a life which is controlling us, the things around us which is controlling us, rather than we controlling the external factors. So it has come down to the mindset thing, and the mindset is the thing that I'm talking about. Nobody can teach anyone. It's something that you live with. Of course, by coaching or mentoring, you can try to work it out, you know, for good or worse. But that is something which is more conscious now, as compared to, you know, getting up early in the morning, thinking through what is your plan for the day, and then leading the day is one scenario versus we get up, okay, now it's time to do this. Okay, now time to do that. You know, not really focusing on the end goals, but rather...
Unfortunately, that's what happens a lot in life. You know, whenever there's something that you got to get onto, you just got to be reactive rather than be proactive. And okay, this is the goal that we're trying to achieve. This is the steps that we need to follow. And, you know, it's important to allocate time to kind of do that as well. All right. Well, what I'd like to have a chat to you a little bit more about, Rusty, is I want to find out a little bit more about, I guess, your property investing journey. You mentioned that you've got a portfolio of $5 million worth of property. How many properties do you have in that portfolio at this point in time?
I got 15.
With a portfolio that size, Rustolgi has certainly seen his fair share of ups and downs during his journey. He remembers the worst moment in his investment career so far.
This is probably my third property that I was looking at. And so this was interstate property. I knew that I had to go for auction over the phone. I did all the research that I used to do. Like I'm kind of a person who would build a report first and then look at the property much more detailed and then try to work out the pricing. And that stipulated to me that this is the maximum price that I would pay for it. And so the lesson that I had, like, on the day of the auction was that I think I got too much emotionally attached to my research process that I have been practicing. And in the auction audience, there were a couple of buyer's agents, like, who are very well claimed, accomplished buyer's agents. And I thought, like, I'm there bidding for them and bidding for the property, and they are in the game as well. So there's something that probably I don't really know. So I actually self-doubted my own research, and I went with the flow emotionally that if they are doing it for a client, adding a price point to it versus I'm doing for myself, if they can see the value as a local agent there, maybe I'm missing out on something. And I actually ended up buying the property on the higher side of my range. But what I realized that the kind of mindset that I had, you know, like in auction, we have less than a few seconds to react on the bid, especially when you're doing it on the phone. It's not really easy. And the lesson that I had was, like, not to get emotional about it. So I'm still holding that property in my portfolio. But it always reminds me of the day of auction that... I actually failed my own process then. Like, I paid slightly more than what I should have paid. I should have been a happy loser on that auction rather than having a winner's remorse now.
Yeah, it's interesting. And we always look back on hindsight. I think that's really, really good that you've shared that with us, because it's hard to sort of take the emotion out of it sometimes when you're looking at, especially this is your third property. It's not like, you know, you've done 10, 15 transactions already. This is your third one. And it's, you know, you're still looking through that process and going. So the biggest learning lesson from that one is that, you know, instead of overpaying just slightly that you said you did, if you had just let that one go, could you have missed an opportunity? Because, you know, potentially, isn't that with that property that you currently hold, is that actually a good property in your portfolio, or is it still sort of, you know, sitting, I guess, flat at this point in time?
The property has not really done too bad. But to your point, like when I'm saying yes to our property, actually I'm saying no to other 10,000 properties as well. So it's not so much so about me saying yes to our property, but more about losing on the other 9,000, you know, 99,900 properties out there.
Yeah, so it's the opportunity cost.
More about the opportunity cost. And it's not so much so about the property that I was talking about as my worst decision. It was more about me having a process and not following it till the end.
Yeah,
I should have walked away at a percentage, because I always look for the bargains. Like if there's a property for me at, say, maybe 93 cents in a dollar or 94 cents in a dollar, I'm not really happy when I'm getting it at 97 in a dollar kind of thing. So that's where I'm coming from. Like I actually overpaid to my liking. Of course, still under the market value from my own research. But it just, I guess, went through with the flow on that day, which I still remember very vividly.
There are many moments like this one in Rastogi's journey where he remembers vividly, including his aha moment where seeing the value in the renovation strategy struck a chord in him and everything seemed to click into place.
So I would talk about my fifth property purchase. So I did all the due diligence on a property which was unloved, demanding for TLC as in tender love care. It was a deceased state, I should say, sorry. It's a deceased state property in Central Coast. And what I realized that, like, I was actually a graduate of Sherry Barber, who talks about renovation. And what I learned from that course was, unless until you do get your hand dirty, as in roll up your sleeve and do things on your own, it's hard to learn things just by reading or, you know, like on the research. So you have to be on the ground, do the things. And that actually led me to go into unrenovated property that I can probably go and do my renovation. And the aha moment that was that I was able to see the value from the strategy that I was trying to deploy that other bidders were not really thinking about. And what I realized that it's the value for me that matters, that would actually define the maximum price I should be able to pay for the property. As compared to what market is doing, they might be on the wrong side of the equation, but it's their strategy. It's their perception of the value. I need to think about my own value add or the value perception and then pay the price accordingly. Because value is what you get and price what you pay. So if there is enough discount from that perspective, whatever threshold I would like to have, I'm more than happy to go. Sometimes that number could be a lot more higher than what the market is really able to pay. So in that scenario, I'm happy to pay over the market price just to win the property, because I see the potential, I see the value that it will bring to me in my portfolio.
Gotcha. That's really interesting. So I guess every deal is going to be different, because I'm also thinking this through as well. I've just been recently having a conversation with another colleague who is actually looking at different deals. And he told me that, you know, other people were coming into this particular deal in New South Wales, actually in Sydney, where every time people were looking at it, they'd make a loss on it, because there was no way that the structure could be made profitable, this particular deal. But then when he came in and structured it slightly differently, he actually returned a very, very profitable rate of return from the rental income, and on top of that, the equity value after doing a certain renovation. So I guess everybody comes in a slightly different perspective. And I think a lot of people just don't really look at different angles. They probably just look at one angle and go, okay, what's the rental income? What is the equity that we can potentially gain? Whereas sometimes, you know, you might be able to look at the particular property, like particularly for development, I can talk from personal experience, is that if you look at a particular deal, there's so many different ways you can chop up the block, you can build this, you can do this and that. And, you know, with so many different potential opportunities, you just got to work out which one is going to be the best one. And it sounds like that's what you did with the particular property that you purchased on your fifth one. And that's, I guess, obviously what's going to work, because if you don't have a plan or goal and you don't know what exactly which direction you head, it's very easy just to jump in and just buy any random property.
No, exactly right. And just to add on to that point is, like, I don't really think or take property just in isolation. To me, it's like, just like what I was doing in my share portfolio for my clients, is that what would that additional stock will do in my portfolio has a lot more weightage, because it is not just about the risk, return profile, but it's also about the risk profile. So to me, from the financial metrics of risk-adjusted return is the thing that I'm looking at. And that actually defines the mandate that what should be my next property be looking like. So I have a mandate, I have a strategy in place first that will define and guide me the mandate for my next purchase. And then that has a more value for me from the strategy or from the portfolio perspective. And if, having said that, I'm not really saying yes or no to other properties which doesn't really lie in that same realm. It's just that I would be looking for a lot more discount for me to get excited about that opportunity.
Coming up after the break, Rastogi breaks down the strategies he implemented when building his portfolio.
So when I was buying my fourth property, I think my broker told me that this is the last property, Rusty. Don't bother about the fifth property.
We learn about his motivators and mentors and why it's crucial to have them.
Everyone has something to share and a lot more for me to learn on a daily basis. I'm learning even now on a daily basis, like what's really going on.
He shares some of the personal habits which had helped him along the way.
And how do you plan for your future? Like, how do you plan for your next 10 years? Then having some milestones on the way.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Shum and you're listening to Property Investory. Rastogi shares with us the strategy he used to build his portfolio of $5 million worth of property.
What I learned early on in my investing career was that we have to really make banks our friends.
Mm.
You know, yes, capital growth matters because that is actually going to make us rich. But we can't really chase capital growth all the time because there will be some ceiling hits through the journey. So we have to be very mindful of what banks can lend us to, as in terms of what would be our serviceability to them. So the combination of having the right cash flow to suit the bank's criteria, as well as the capital growth as a combination, is what I actually look at to proceed. So when I was buying my fourth property, I think my broker told me that this is the last property, Rusty. Don't bother about the fifth property. But when I did the same thing for the fifth property, I was like, okay, one more property, last one. And then probably I was told the same thing on my 15th property, but this is the last one. It was my strategy that I have to stop after 15 properties. So I actually gained 15th property 3 years ago. So it's just like following my strategy, nothing more.
Yeah, okay.
So two things, cash flow and capital growth are important. To me, the other thing, which is equity in the place, is also very important. Like how much discount I'm getting, because that will actually deleverage my portfolio.
Mm. Gotcha.
So having a combination of the three is the key thing from my perspective.
So in order to be able to, I guess, grow and to increase your portfolio, were you basically leapfrogging by pulling out the equity from each property that gained to be able to invest into the next one? And with the cash flow that was funding the portfolio to service the properties that you had, that was basically how you were able to grow it like that?
Yeah, exactly right. So to me, it was more about having the right strategy first, then having the right location, and then the right property. Price, what we pay, is very beyond tertiary, actually. Because now if I look back on a few of my purchases, like that property which I bought at about 400,000 4 years ago, now it is rated as like valued at about 620. Now, am I really worried about whether I paid 10,000 more or less the other, like when I was purchasing? Not. So the idea is that as long as it's in the growth zone, something that would actually help me get my equity back immediately that I can reuse it for my next purchase has been the things that I've been looking at. But having the corner of the eye looking at the long-term growth potential as well, because it's not just about growing the portfolio. I have to also be conscious of the later stages of consolidation and wrapping it up. So having a strategy overall for the whole portfolio is the key thing as well.
Rastogi began to feel the benefits of previous investments, and it resonated with him how important it was to keep the momentum up moving forward.
So my biggest why has been generating the wealth and making that kind of money that I was earning actively in my job. I mean, it was a great dream role that I was working on. I was managing portfolio in tune of $2 billion. And what I realized that I was actually getting more rewarded for the decisions that I made a few years ago. And I realized that generating of the wealth passively has actually opened up my, I guess, constraints around time and energy and money that I can choose to pursue my own passions. And that has been my why, that I'm actually helping other people, my clients, to think about their own reason or think about their constraint and how they can get away from them so that they can lead the life they desire themselves.
Rastogi has mentioned already that his journey was heavily influenced by reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad and by listening to Sheree Barber talking through renovations, who also along the way has impacted his investment journey and strategies.
I think there are so many gurus out there, so many experts out there, but at the end of the day, it's more about the holistic approach. Because when I went to Bob Anderson course or, you know, Jason and Amy, who are another group of property developers, they have a theory. They have worked out the way of how to do things. But I think education is not enough unless you take action. So there are things around mindset as well. So I've actually gone to the programs like Tony Robbins, who talks about taking action, thinking about what's your why and, you know, pivoting, as you said earlier. You know, so in direct answer is that I've actually gone to so many experts, Bob Anderson, Sheree Barber, Dominic, Dimphna Beholt, even my colleagues, like people whom I actually worked with. Like the good thing about all these networks is that it has exposed me to other fellow investors and developers. And to me, they're more approachable. We can learn from each other's mistakes. I still go out for so many socials, and everyone has something to share and a lot more for me to learn on a daily basis. I'm learning even now on a daily basis, like what's really going on. And there are heaps of information out there, but as long as you can put it together, as more qualified, that's where the key is, and taking action is the bigger thing than that.
Every serious investor practices certain habits and routines which contribute to their success, and Rastogi is no different.
Meditation is the key thing, I would think, that actually talking to self, as in reflecting back on how maybe the year has gone or the month has gone or the day has gone, and how do you plan for your future? Like, how do you plan for your next 10 years? Then having some milestones on the way and thinking about the end goal, like thinking about your obituary on your own, like on your deathbed, what do you want people to talk about? So just that kind of a mindset, and also thinking that you are more in control of the world around you, maker of the circumstances. So you, as in one, has to have control of the emotions, not really being reactive to it, but rather having the self-belief that we are not, I mean, it's a glass whether is half full or half empty. To me, it's always fully, it's a full all the time. So having that kind of mindset, the feeling of abundance and giving back to the community personally has given me a lot more, I guess, the confidence and the kick that I need to do more, because I've achieved for myself, for my family, but now it's more about increasing my circle of influence. And that's the reason why I've actually chosen to start my own Get Rare Properties as a business, so that I can reach out, help them out to achieve what they are looking for.
we find out what advice Rastogi would give to his younger self if he met himself 10 years ago.
I would say, like, just keep chuckling, because I think there's not, like, I'm not really much different from who am I today versus what I was 10 years ago. It's just that having that kind of clarity, a much more clarity with confidence, is the thing. Like, the small little habits, like, it's what we say is that it's 1 degree consistently, persistently, will get you a lot more ahead of the curve. So things goes exponentially, but as long as you're consistent and persistent, have faith in the system and the process, then it's a matter of just going through. Having said that, the only thing I would say is have a coach, have a mentor, learn from them directly. You don't really have to look back and tell yourself things. As you said, in hindsight, it's easy to say something, but when we actually approach a mentor or coach, we are actually accessing their network as well as their wisdom, as well as their experience and exposure in no time.
Thank you to Vaibhav Rastogi, our guest on this episode of Property Investory. If you want to hear more about his journey and get a copy of the show notes on the website, head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes. The show notes will give you the inside scoop on the little gold nuggets of wisdom all our guests share from their backstory and all their overall strategies and philosophies. Plus, you'll get a copy of the advice broken down and shared in a quick and easy to consume format. Just head over to propertyinvestory.com/notes and download it today. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.